to the Heiress of Slytherin, a Harry Potter podcast. I'm Micaela, your host. Welcome to episode 54. Today I'm going to be discussing chapter 13 of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, Gryffindor versus Ravenclaw. And to get into a little bit of Wizarding World news, Hogwarts Legacy came out earlier this year in 2023, and it's very popular, and there's going to be another Harry Potter game coming out on June 27th. So by the time that I post this recorded episode, it'll probably be the 26th, and the day after the new game will come out. And it's available on iOS and Android, and it's pretty much like just another game for fans to look forward to that you can just play on your phone, and it's going to be featuring all the Harry Potter locations, you know, like Diagon Alley and Hogsmeade and Hogwarts, of course, and items and spells and all these other magical things that is just going to be fun for fans to do. It's just an addition to Hogwarts Legacy. And another little piece of news, of course, a few months ago, the Harry Potter TV series was announced and Daniel Radcliffe was asked about it. And recently this just came out basically saying that he knows that whoever gets cast as Harry Potter in this TV show is just their whole life is going to change just like it did for him. This is the series that made him famous. You know, he played Harry Potter for so long and he is Harry Potter in everyone's minds. And basically the quote that I liked that he said was, "The weird thought I have now is like, oh, that's probably like an 8-year-old kid, but out there somewhere whose life is going to change in a couple years." So that's where his like brain goes, that this some kid out there is walking around, he's going to be the new Harry Potter in this TV show. And he was also asked if he would ever like do a cameo or play someone in there. And he said that probably not, because he thinks it needs to be separate. And if he's in there, if Harry Potter is in this new Harry Potter show, like, you know, it's going to be it's going to be like kind of strange, I guess, basically is where he's coming from. And I get that. You don't always need to do cameos. That's kind of like fan service. And if you want this to be something separate, then I understand like not having the original cast come back and make cameos. But I also wouldn't be opposed to seeing it because I just love the cast. And before I get into the summary of last week's episode, I just want to remind everybody, you can email me at theheiressofslytherinpodcast@gmail.com. You can donate or leave a voice message through the Anchor link. Twitter is @SlytherinPod. Facebook page is The Heiress of Slytherin Podcast. And this podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Breaker, Radio Public, Anchor, and Pocket Casts. And now I can get into the summary from last week's episode. I talked about Chapter 12 of Prisoner of Azkaban, and that was the Patronus. And this chapter, Harry starts to have lessons with Professor Lupin. The holidays ended, and Harry received a firebolt from he doesn't know who. It's just like an anonymous Christmas gift, the greatest broom on earth. And it's pretty crazy, right? And Hermione's the only one that seemed to be really suspicious of it. Harry and Ron were like, yeah, that's weird, but firebolt, we love Quidditch, is exciting. Hermione thought that Sirius Black sent Harry the broom, and she's actually right. They don't know that yet, though. And she told McGonagall, so she confiscated the broom from Harry because they need to check it, make sure there's no jinxes or anything dangerous on there. So Harry and Ron were both pretty upset with Hermione about that, even though they knew that she meant well. Hermione is also kind of going through a lot because of her classes. You know, it's starting to take a toll on her, her class load and all the homework she has to do and the time turn and everything. And people are starting to notice, like Harry and Ron notice that she's starting to struggle a little bit. Harry's lessons also, he's not doing like perfectly. He's not casting these amazing corporeal Patronus charms, but a little something is happening. Like, it's not like nothing's happening when he does a Patronus charm, but it still isn't quite yet enough to fend off a real Dementor. But he's learning, he's going through his lessons, and Lupin thinks he's making good progress. And finally, towards the end of the chapter, McGonagall decides, Harry, we couldn't find anything wrong with your fireball. No dangerous, malicious jinxes or spells or anything like that. So here you go, and you need to beat Ravenclaw in the finals, right? So Harry is excited about that, and Ron is too. Like, everyone's excited, and they're like, okay, let's go make up with Hermione. She only meant well. And they go to make up with Hermione and say, like, hey, you know, everything's okay. McGonagall gave the firebolt back and all that. And as Ron goes to put the firebolt up in the dormitory, he screams. And he just comes running down the stairs shouting at Hermione. And he's holding up his sheets, like, from his bed. And you can see the red, like, it's blood. You know, all these, like, red marks and, like, scratchy marks or whatever. Like, Scabbers was, like, escaping, like, fighting for his life. That's what it looks like on Ron's sheet. Like, there's holes and everything in it. And we know that Crookshanks, Hermione's cat, has been after Scabbers for quite some time now. It's, you would think it's like a cat and mouse or cat and rat type of thing, but it seems a little bit more like specific. Crookshanks is really noticing when, like, Ron will be like, Scabbers is in my pocket, and then Crookshanks goes to attack Ron's pocket, you know. So they're starting to think something weird's going on. And when Ron's sheets look as though Scabbers has been killed, you know, he blames it on Hermione. And that is where the chapter ends. It is the beginning of the end of Ron and Hermione's friendship. That's what it seems like. And it's pretty bad. But we're going to get into more of that right now in this chapter. So let's get started. It looked like the end of Ron and Hermione's friendship. That's literally the first sentence of this chapter, because that's what it seems like. Like, they're both mad at the other, and Harry just doesn't see how they could ever make up. Like, he does not have high hopes for them because they're both so angry and hurt by each other. And Harry, he honestly does think that Crookshanks ate Scabbers, because it's like a cat and rat thing, right? Like, he thinks that Crookshanks was being a cat and ate Scabbers. That's what it looks like. That's what the evidence is pointing to. Like, Ron's bedsheet, it looks like Crookshanks did eat him. And so Ron is just absolutely enraged that Hermione never took his concerns seriously. Like, Crookshanks did attempt to eat Scabbers a few times, and Hermione just brushed it off, and she didn't see that there was, like, a problem with it, and she didn't keep a close eye on Crookshanks or anything like that. And Hermione is, like, trying to pretend that Crookshanks is innocent and says that Ron should just go look for Scabbers underneath the boys' beds and everything. Like, that's what Hermione is kind of insinuating and saying and stuff like that. And she's saying that he has no proof that Crookshanks had eaten Scabbers, and the ginger hairs had probably been there since Christmas, and Ron never liked Crookshanks from the moment that they saw Crookshanks in a magical menagerie earlier that summer in Diagon Alley. So they're both absolutely mad at each other. And Harry, he's sure that Crookshanks did eat Scabbers, and he tries to tell Hermione too, like, hey, all the evidence is pointing towards Crookshanks eating or having eaten Scabbers. And Hermione gets very mad at Harry for even suggesting that. She even tells Harry, like, okay, side with Ron. I knew that you would. First the firebolt, now this. Like, everything is just my fault, isn't it? Like, it's all my fault, Harry. And then she tells him to leave her alone. She has a lot of work to do. And Hermione does have a lot of work to do. She's under so much stress with all of these classes. Plus, her best friends are, you know, not siding with her. They're getting mad with her. Like, she, for multiple things, first the firebolt and now this, when she really only meant well with the firebolt, and they know that, but that didn't stop them from being mad at her. And now this whole thing with the pets. Like, this is not good. She's under a lot of stress already, and this is just making everything worse for her. And Ron, he's very upset too. He always talks about how boring and annoying Scabbers is, but he's taking the loss of Scabbers pretty hard. Like, they knew he would. Harry and his brothers, they knew that Ron would take this loss pretty hard, and it's exactly what's happening. And the twins even tell him, like, you've always been saying how boring he is, and he's been looking sick for quite a while now. Like, his color's been all weird. Like, remember you got him the rat tonic in the first place? Like, you knew that something was off with him. This is just, like, a natural thing. And he's saying it's probably better that he had, like, a quick death anyways. He probably didn't even feel a thing. That's what he's saying. Like, Crookshanks probably ate him so quickly that he just died a quick death, like, painless death. That's what they're telling him. And Ron keeps saying, like, no, he was a good rat and everything. And he's even like, remember when he bit Goyle, Harry? Remember that? And Harry's like, yeah, it's true. That did happen. And Fred, he can't even keep a straight face. He tells his brother his finest hour. Let the scar on Goyle's finger stand as a lasting tribute to his memory. And so Ron doesn't like that because Fred is so unserious right now. And he says, like, if you want, like, a rat so bad, just go down to Hogsmeade on the next weekend and get a new rat. Like, you're just moping around. Like, there's no point in that. And Harry, who is tired of having Ron be so upset and sad and everything, it's his last-ditch attempt to cheer Ron up. He tells him to come to the team's practice before the match. So this is the last practice before the match for the Quidditch Finals. And he tells Ron, like, try out my broom, like my firebolt. Remember my new firebolt? You haven't gotten to ride it yet. Like, let's come to practice. And then at the end of practice, you can ride it and it'll be super fun. This is Harry's, like, last-ditch attempts to, you know, try to cheer him up. And Ron, you know, he kind of likes this. It takes his mind off of Scabbers. He's excited to try the firebolt, the fastest broom in the world. And he even wants to, like, try to shoot a few goals on it. Like, he's very excited. And the whole team just loves the broom. They're so confident with this. They're so excited that Harry, their seeker, is amazing already. But now he has the best broom in the world. Like, this is the most exciting thing for them. Even Madam Hooch is very impressed as well. Like, they can't believe the balance of the broom and everything. Like, even Harry's Nimbus 2000 was so great. Like, as great as that was, there might have been, like, a few flaws, and this firebolt is just flawless. It's just perfect. Even Madam Hooch can't stop admiring it, like, to the point where Wood has to tell her, like, hey, Madam Hooch, like, can we practice now? Can Harry have the firebolt back? Like, they're all just so enamored by it. So practice happens and everything, and Oliver tries to give, like, last minute pointers and everything, and he says that Cho Chang is a fourth year and she's pretty good. She's playing as Ravenclaw's seeker, and, you know, she's had some injuries and problems and stuff like that, and she's back though. She's fine for tomorrow's match. And Wood says he was kind of hoping that she wouldn't be because she is pretty good, but, you know, she's made a full recovery. We can't do anything about it now. And he's saying that she flies on a Comet 260, which is going to look like a joke next to the Firebolt, which pretty much most of the brooms, almost all of the brooms will anyways. And Harry flying on that Firebolt for the first time, it just feels like a dream. It's just absolutely amazing. I actually want to read the description of what it feels like. The Firebolt turned with the lightest touch. It seemed to obey his thoughts rather than his grip. It sped across the field at such speed that the stadium turned into a green and gray blur. Harry turned it so sharply that Alicia Spinett screamed. Then he went into a perfectly controlled dive, brushing the grassy field before rising 30, 40, 50 feet into the air again. And then when Wood does let the snitch out and Harry catches it, like, super fast, he has absolutely no criticisms. Like, they're so happy. Harry has his firebolt. They're so confident. Like, I'm telling you, Harry's already such a great player that, like, with him on this firebolt, like, they just feel absolutely unstoppable. They're so excited right now. And it was their best practice ever. Like, the firebolt just gave everybody such a huge boost of confidence. Oliver didn't have any criticisms, which I'm glad, because he's been annoying me this whole book. He's been such a bad captain. So, you know, it took a firebolt for him to not have criticisms. But either way, this broom is just boosting everybody's confidence, and everyone's just really excited. And George has to point out, like, oh, that's a first, no criticisms from you, Oliver. So, you know, I'm glad George is the way he is and pointing this out. And Oliver says that hopefully the Dementors don't come out again. And Fred says that they won't, because Dumbledore will go absolutely ballistic. Because if you remember a few episodes back when they were telling Harry about what happened after he fainted with the Dementors and everything, everyone was saying that they had never seen Dumbledore so angry before. Like, even the teachers, like, Dumbledore was furious that the Dementors decided to come onto the Quidditch pitch. So Fred is saying, like, there's no chance they'll even come back to the pitch because Dumbledore will be even more furious than before. Like, they're like, there's no chance they'll come onto the field. So most of the team goes to the locker room to go shower and, you know, go back to bed or whatever they're going to do, go to dinner. And Harry stays behind because Ron, you know, he wants to try the Firebolt out. So he rides it and he has such a great time. But one thing I should mention is that Madam Hooch was asleep. She fell asleep during their practice. Like, the only reason she woke up right now is because Ron went on the firebolt and it woke her up with a start. Like, seriously, Madam Hooch, you need to wake up. You're out there like, so you're supposed to be protecting and guarding the kids right now. That's why you're out there. Because McGonagall was like, you guys can't be practicing late at night or whatever, because Sirius Black is after Harry and he was spotted nearby and he's in danger and everything. That's why they have Madame Hooch out there. She's supposed to be protecting them because she's an adult. Like, seriously, I can't even believe that she's asleep right now. And I feel for her because I'm almost always sleepy. No matter what I'm doing, I'm most likely sleepy for probably like 22 hours of the day, like minimum. I'm seriously always sleepy. But Madame Hooch, like, I'm awake when I need to be, you know? So she needs to be awake right now, and she's not. So, like, what if Sirius Black appeared out of nowhere? Think of the trouble she would be in. Think of the guilt she would feel. Like, I don't even know. She should be awake, though, no matter what. Like, that's just a joke. You know how, like, sometimes things happen, or like when emails or meetings that could have been an email, and it's like, why do I need to be there for that? You know, maybe it's like a joke to people. I feel like this is what it is to Harry and Ron. Like, they're like, this is a joke. Like, why is she even here? Why does she even need to be here? Because she's not doing anything. Like, that's what it seems like to me. But Ron, he has the time of his life on that broom, on the Firebolt. And it's just so much fun because it's so smooth and the acceleration is great. The turning is great. Like, it is just the perfect broom. So once they're finished and they're walking back up to the castle, Harry sees a pair of eyes in the darkness, like just kind of looking at them. And Ron does Lumos, or he casts Lumos, and the beam of light goes like across the grass to the bottom of a tree and illuminates the branches. But it's not the Grim, it's Crookshanks, probably the last animal on earth that Ron wants to see right now. And he yells at Crookshanks, tells him to get out of there. And he says to Harry, like, see what I mean? She's always letting him just roam about. She and him referring to Hermione always letting Crookshanks just roam about wherever he wants. And he's saying that he's probably washing down scabbards with a couple of birds now. Like, kind of dramatic, Ron. But, you know, that's exactly what I would have thought too if I was in Ron's position. So Hermione, he's just even more mad at Hermione. This is more proof. This is like a reminder to be mad at her. Like, she's just letting her cat that supposedly killed Scabbers just roam about, just do whatever he wants. And so Harry doesn't say anything to Ron's, you know, complaints right now. He's actually sighing like a sigh of relief because he could have sworn that for a moment those eyes that he had seen weren't Crookshanks's, that they belong to the Grim. Remember the omen and the big black dog that he's been seeing a few times now? He's seen it twice now. He also saw it on the cover of a book in Diagon Alley about death omens and divination. Professor Trelawney said he had the Grim in his teacup, like a death omen. She said that he was going to die. So this Grim was pretty stressful. Like, I would be very anxious and stressed if I was Harry too about this. Like, that's scary. And to keep seeing these things everywhere. But he was pretty sure for a moment, like, those eyes belong to the Grim. Of course, he didn't say anything to Ron, but that's what Harry thought. And he's just relieved, though, like, and he's kind of like ashamed of his little moment of panic. But it's like, Harry, like, you're okay, relax, take it easy on yourself every once in a while. Like, it's just completely a normal thing to, like, think and to be scared and worried about. And he doesn't say anything to Ron at all, and he doesn't even look to his left or to his right. He just stares straight ahead all the way up until they get into the entrance hall of the castle. So I do want to mention that Harry did actually see the Grim's eyes. Remember that this Grim, this big black dog, is actually the animagus form of Sirius Black, the one who escaped Azkaban and supposedly is out to kill Harry to finish the job for Voldemort, because apparently he's Voldemort's right-hand man. You know, that's the whole narrative that the Wizarding World believes. And they don't know anything about Sirius being an animagus, or about Peter Pettigrew being an animagus, being Scabbers, Lupin being a werewolf. Like, they don't know all that. Hermione knows about Lupin being a werewolf because she figured it out and she's smart. But they don't know anything about the Animagi and the Marauders and all of that I've explained, like, in previous episodes. So Harry did actually see the Grim's eyes, but it wasn't really the Grim necessarily, because it was Sirius Black in his animagus form. And Crookshanks has been hanging out with Sirius. Like, this is not the last time that Harry is going to see Crookshanks and this black dog together. So yes, Harry did actually see that dog's eyes, supposedly the Grim's eyes, And it wasn't Crookshanks, but, you know, Sirius in his Animagus form was able to kind of hide before they could actually see him. That would have terrified Ron if he would have seen the Grim. Remember, he grew up in a family of wizards, so he's very superstitious about these wizarding things. Like, wizards are superstitious about the Grim. And Ron's uncle actually died after seeing the Grim, you know, 24 hours later. So very much, like, superstitious, and that would have freaked Ron out so much. Ron would have been just an insane ball of anxiety. Like, he would have been so scared. But yes, Crookshanks and Sirius have been communicating and stuff in their animal forms. I mean, Crookshanks is a legit animal, but Sirius is a human in his Animagus form as a dog. But they have been communicating, and Harry did see those eyes for sure. So the next morning, everyone, the whole Gryffindor Tower is just absolutely so excited for this match, especially now that Harry has his Firebolt back. The boys in the dormitory, they all seem to think that the Firebolt deserved a guard of honor. So they all kind of accompany him, guard him, walking down to the entrance hall for breakfast. And every head turns as Harry walks in with that Firebolt. Like, everyone is just completely shocked and enamored by it. Like, they cannot believe that Harry has a Firebolt. And they already know, too. Like, that's bad news for whoever's playing against them, because Harry's already so good. And now he has a Firebolt. Like, yeah, good luck, Ravenclaw. And you already know that Malfoy and the rest of the Slytherins are absolutely thunderstruck. Like, they can't even believe their eyes. Like, you already know that this makes Malfoy so angry. He can't stand when anything good happens to Harry or for Harry. So you already know that Malfoy, like, can't even believe his shock right now. Everyone is just staring at the Firebolt, trying to get, like, a taste of the glory of the Firebolt. And even the Ravenclaw and Hufflepuff tables, like, come up to the Gryffindor table to get a closer look at the Firebolt. Like, everybody just wants to see it. And remember, Percy's girlfriend, Penelope Clearwater, she is in Ravenclaw, and they have a bet about who's going to win, because it's Ravenclaw versus Gryffindor in this game right now. And so Percy even tells her, like, no sabotage, because she comes up and she asks if she could hold the Firebolt, and Percy's like, well, you can't sabotage. Remember, we have a bet going on. And he tells Harry, like, Harry, please, like, in an urgent whisper, you need to win. Like, we have 10 galleons on whoever wins, and I don't have 10 galleons to give her, so please, I really need you to win. Cedric Diggory even tells Harry congrats on the broom, because he thinks it's so cool. Remember, Cedric is the Hufflepuff Seeker, and he caught the Snitch in the game before Harry did, but that's only because Harry fainted because of the Dementors. And as soon as the game was done and Cedric realized that Harry had fainted, he even called for a rematch. He was like, no, that wasn't fair. Like, I didn't know that he fainted and I caught the Snitch, you know. But everyone agreed that they won fair and square. But yeah, so that's Cedric. He's just a true Hufflepuff. Also, so sad for Cedric, but he is going to die next year in the fourth book during the Triwizard Tournament. So really sad. Cedric's a good guy. But he does tell Harry, like, congrats on the broom. And as Percy and Penelope, like, walk away, they're going down to the Quidditch pitch. Who other than Draco Malfoy, Vincent Crabbe, and Gregory Goyle to come and approach Harry and just try to be nasty and everything? And Draco asks him, like, and they're coming for a closer look. They're not just coming to mess with Harry. Of course, they want to mess with Harry, but they also want to get a closer look at the Firebolt. And honestly, like, Malfoy, his dad's so rich, he could buy a Firebolt. Like, the Malfoys are very rich. Like, I'm 100% sure that Lucius can just buy a Firebolt for Draco and send it to him. But I kind of get that it would look weird. Like, he didn't do it in the first place. He didn't already do it, you know, but he bought the whole Slytherin team Nimbus 2001s. Like, yeah, Harry has a Firebolt now and they didn't know about it, but, like, you knew the Firebolt existed. Like, why didn't you just get one in the summertime when you were in Diagon Alley shopping for your school supplies? Why didn't you have your dad get you one for Christmas? Like, he could have gotten one by now. Like, they're rich enough. So, and Harry's rich enough too, but he didn't buy it for himself. Sirius did. And Sirius was rich enough. Like, these are all rich families. So, like, Lucius could have bought Malfoy one. Anyways, he didn't though. And Draco tells him, like, you sure you can handle that broom, Potter? And Harry just casually is like, yeah, reckon so. Like, sure I can. Like, obviously, Malfoy. And he Malfoy tells Harry, like, oh, I'm sure it has plenty of special features. It's a shame that it doesn't come with a parachute in case a Dementor gets too close. And Malfoy, Crabbe, and Goyle all think that's so hilarious. But a really great comeback is that Harry says, pity you can't attach an extra arm to yours, Malfoy. Then it can catch the snitch for you. Which is, oh, that's a big burn. That is such a big burn. And they all know it. And even the whole Gryffindor team, they just laugh. They're all dying because that was such a great, that was a good comeback for sure. And Harry, like, Harry's already proved he's a way better player than you, Malfoy. Like, you're just embarrassing yourself. You need to stop. Like, Harry's proved time and time again that he's way better than you. You're not even better than, you're not even the best, the second best seeker. Like, you're probably the fourth. Because Cedric is really great. Cho is really great. No one's ever been like, yeah, Malfoy's such a great seeker. Like, you need to stop. Just stop, Malfoy. Harry has proved time and time again that he's better. Like, just stop. You're embarrassing yourself. Luckily, the weather is really nice out today. Unlike that match against Hufflepuff, where they were playing in really dangerous weather conditions. With the rain and the storm, like, pouring down. Like, it was bad. Very, very dangerous weather conditions. But that's Quidditch for you. You play pretty much no matter the weather. So Harry puts his wand into his shirt, like inside of his Quidditch robes. He, in his shirt, it's like a jersey pretty much, you know. But he's putting his wand in his shirt. He really hopes he won't have to use it. But he doesn't want to faint in front of the Dementors appear again. So he's prepared. He has his wand ready. He'll know what to do. And Oliver is, of course, being the way he is, he's saying, like, you guys, we really, really need to win this game. They all know that. But he's saying, like, we all know what we have to do. And, like, if we lose this match, we're out of the running. And that would just absolutely devastate Oliver. Because this is his last year at Hogwarts. He's a seventh year. This is his last chance to win the Quidditch Cup. So he, oh gosh, he desperately, desperately wants to win. And I get that. They all do. But, you know, he's just letting them know, like, we gotta win. Like, if we lose this match, then we're done. We are no longer in the running for the Quidditch Cup. So they all know what's at stake here. Cho Chang, she is the only girl on the Ravenclaw Quidditch team. And she's the seeker. Remember, Cedric was like, she was injured, but now she's okay. She's back. She's pretty good, though. So, you know, don't underestimate her. Harry sees her and he notices that she's about a head shorter than he is. Remember, she's a year older than him, too. She's a fourth year. But Harry, despite being super nervous, he can't help but notice that she is extremely pretty. And this is where his crush on Cho Chang develops. And this continues all the way into the fifth book. So he has a crush on her for pretty much almost 2 years is how long his crush lasts. He likes her all throughout fourth year. He has a crush on her for the rest of this year, pretty much. So, you know, this is where it starts. The match is about to begin, and Oliver shakes hands with the Ravenclaw Quidditch captain, who is Roger Davies. So Roger is somebody who we'll see a little bit more of in the next book, not like a ton more of, but he is mentioned a bit more. And I have to tell you, this Triwizard Tournament, that's next book in the fourth book, there is a huge, huge Quidditch representation, like a huge Quidditch presence among the Triwizard Tournament champions. So the champions we have are Harry Potter, Cedric Diggory, who we've already met, he's the Hufflepuff seeker, and the other champions from other schools, we have Fleur Delacour from Beauxbatons, and then we have Victor Crumb from Durmstrang. So Victor Crumb, he is the best seeker in the world. And that's how good he is. He's still in school, though. He goes to Durmstrang. And that's a huge reason, like, in the next book, everyone is just absolutely so excited. He's going to be spending most of the year at Hogwarts for the Triwizard Tournament because he's famous. You know, Harry's famous, of course, too. But Victor Crumb is a famous athlete. Harry's also, you could say, he's a famous athlete. But Harry's not necessarily famous for his Quidditch. He is famous amongst Hogwarts for being really good at Quidditch, like being a great seeker, but he's more famous to the wizarding world for the obvious reasons, being Harry Potter, the only one to survive the killing curse and all that. Victor Crumb is famous solely because of Quidditch. He's the best seeker in the world. He's very good. He's going to be playing in the Quidditch World Cup this summer. So that's Victor Crumb. That's one Triwizard Tournament champion. And the Yule Ball, he'll be going with Hermione. He ends up having a crush on Hermione. So that'll be super fun to discuss in the next book. But another champion is Fleur Delacour. She doesn't play Quidditch, but her Yule Ball date is this Roger Davies right now that's about to play in this match, the one that Oliver Wood just shook hands with. And then we have Cedric Diggory, who of course is the Hufflepuff Seeker, and they played against him, you know, a while back in this book. And his date to the Yule Ball in the next book, and someone who becomes his girlfriend, is Cho Chang, this Cho right here that Harry is seeing and thinking she's pretty. So those two are, you know, a Quidditch couple right there. And then we have Harry Potter, who is, of course, we know he's the Gryffindor Seeker. So I'm telling you, there is huge Quidditch representation at the Triwizard tournament. And it goes even further than that. Ludo Bagman, he played Quidditch, you know, back in the day, and for like a professional club and everything. And he played a beater. And that's the position that Fred and George play. So, and he's like the announcer, I guess. He works for the Ministry of Magic and everything, and he's an interesting character. We'll get into him in the next book. But I like the name Ludo. I named my dog Ludo, not necessarily after Ludo Bagman, the character specifically. Not that I was like, oh, I like this character, I'm getting my dog that. But I wanted a Harry Potter name, and that's the one I chose, so Ludo. But, you know, I'm just saying there's so much Quidditch representation in Triwizard Tournament, not only amongst the champions there, and Harry and Victor and Cedric and Fleur's date, Roger, but also in Ludo Bagman, who is like the announcer, and he played Quidditch before. So pretty cool stuff there. Lee Jordan is the one commentating on this match. And is that a word, commentating? I don't know. Commenting on this match, I guess, is what the proper word is. And he just, like, the whole entire school is just in awe of the Firebolt. It is just so cool. Harry is already pretty cool. He just got even cooler with this Firebolt. So everyone is just in awe by it. And Lee Jordan keeps mentioning, wow, that Firebolt is amazing. And it flies so fast. There's everything. They're all just so in awe by it. And Lee Jordan keeps mentioning different features of it. He mentions like the built-in auto brake and all these things. So he's just choosing to commentate on that. And McGonagall keeps telling him like, yep, it's great, but make sure you're commenting on the match. So Harry's broom is, of course, clearly the best out of all the brooms on that Quidditch pitch. And he sees that Cho is pretty good. She's a really good flyer, despite not being on a Firebolt. And Harry sees the snitch, and he almost gets it, but he's a little distracted by Cho Chang, right? She's smiling at him and everything, and he's a little distracted. Harry almost gets hit by a bludger, so that's bad because it could have knocked him out, and it also messed him up. He can no longer see the snitch. He doesn't know where it went. The bludger almost hit him and he had to swerve to avoid it. So now he's like, okay, I don't see the snitch anymore. That's not great. So Katie, she scores the first goal for Gryffindor, and eventually Gryffindor is 50 points ahead. Then they're 80 points ahead, and Ravenclaw has zero. And of course, Lee Jordan just keeps commenting on the Firebolts, and McGonagall keeps yelling at him for it. Ravenclaw then eventually scores three goals and everything, so the game keeps going on. And, you know, because of where the score's at right now, if Cho catches the snitch before Harry, then Ravenclaw is going to win and Gryffindor's out. So, you know, there's a lot riding on this right now. And he's noticing that Cho is, like, following him instead of searching for the snitch. And, you know, she kind of just appears out of nowhere in front of Harry. And Harry, you know, he swerves to avoid a collision. But also Wood tells him, like Oliver tells him, Harry, like, this is not the time to be a gentleman. And he doesn't just tell him. He's, like, screaming at him up in the air. Like, this is not the time to be a gentleman. Knock her off her broom if you have to. And I agree. Like, come on, Harry. Like, don't let a pretty girl distract you. Like, this is the first time this is happening to you. Like, stop. You're 13. We get it. But no, you cannot let this happen. And of course, the snitch vanishes again. And, you know, Cho decided to follow Harry instead of just searching for the snitch herself. That's kind of a good move because no matter what, Harry has to search for it. So, you know, I kind of get her like line of thinking there. And Harry knows he just has to get it no matter what. So Harry decides, okay, if Cho is just going to tail me instead of searching for the snitch by herself, then I'm going to show her the consequences of this. Like, I have the firebolt, I have the better room, like, I can overcome you here for sure. So he decides to dive again, like pretending he saw the snitch, you know. And so Cho thinks that he did see it, so she follows him, of course. And he decides to pull out of the dive last minute very sharply, and she just keeps going downward. Like, her, she does not have the firebolt. It will not give her the same, like, turns and trajectories and stuff that Harry's broom does give him. And then this time, he actually does see the firebolt. This is the third time in the match now that he has seen the firebolt. So this time he does accelerate, and Cho, who sees him like above her, like in the air, still follows him. She decides to accelerate too. And he's winning, he's gaining on the snitch, like he has the speed of the firebolt. And then all of a sudden he hears Cho scream, like, oh, like she's screaming. So Harry looks down, he's distracted now, and he sees three Dementors that are just like black hoods all like around them, and they all look up at Harry. Harry doesn't even stop to think, he's still flying, but he pulls out his wand and he casts a Patronus charm, the Expecto Patronum, and it's something enormous, silvery white. It's his Patronus that's like coming out, and it's not absolutely like perfect, but it seems to kind of be working. And he shoots it directly at the Dementors, but he doesn't pause at all to see if his Patronus is going to work. He doesn't even worry about that because he's almost at the snitch. And his mind is still very clear. Like, he's not hearing any screaming. He's not feeling like he's about to pass out. Nothing's happening. They're not having an effect on him. So he's very excited, and he finally catches the snitch. He reaches for it and he grabs it and he catches it. So, of course, the entire stadium, well, mostly the Gryffindors and not the Slytherins for sure, they're all cheering very loudly, and they all run onto the field, and the whole Gryffindor Quidditch team flies down, and Oliver is saying, "That's my boy." He's so excited. He's overjoyed. Alicia, Angelina, and Katie, they all kiss Harry because they're so excited. I mean, not like on the mouth, like on his like forehead or cheek or whatever, but the whole team is so excited. So it's Oliver, Alicia, Angelina, Katie, Harry, Fred, and George. And the twins come down and they're all excited. They all hug Harry very tightly. Like, the whole Gryffindor team is excited, and so are the rest of the Gryffindor house. So they all come running down onto the field. Ron is in the lead and the entire crowd is just cheering. Everyone's congratulating Harry. He's hearing different congratulations from like Hagrid, Seamus, Percy. Everyone is just so, so, so excited. Then he hears a voice tell him that was quite a Patronus, and it was Lupin. And Harry is so, so, so excited. He's saying, "Did you see that? The Dementors didn't affect me at all. I didn't feel a single thing." And Lupin's like, "Yeah, that's actually because they weren't Dementors. Come here and I'll show you." And it was Malfoy, Crabbe, Goyle, and Marcus Flint. Remember Marcus Flint? He's the Slytherin team captain. They were all like tripping, struggling to remove their black robes like off of themselves and everything. It looked as though Malfoy had been standing on Goyle's shoulders, and you see McGonagall just standing over them looking absolutely furious. And she tells them that was so unworthy, that was an unworthy trick, like trying to sabotage Gryffindor, like the Gryffindor seeker. And you know what? You all get detention and you all get 50 points taken from Slytherin. She also says that she'll be speaking to Professor Dumbledore about this. And, you know, she's just absolutely so angry. And Dumbledore's even about to walk towards them, and he's celebrating in the victory and everything. And Ron is just doubling over with laughter. He thinks it's so hilarious that Malfoy is like tangled in the robe and trying to get out and everything. And I have to say, I don't think this is punishment enough, like McGonagall. For it's your house, first of all, Gryffindor, and you're an ex-Quidditch player, and you love Quidditch, and you want to win. Like, seriously, you're only going to give them, I mean, the detention could be weeks long, like, it could be once or twice a week for a month or whatever, but you're only taking 50 points? Seriously? Like, I don't know. I would have been like, okay, how many teams did Gryffindor score? Like, they had, what is that, 80 plus 150? I think, because they had 80 points before, at least 80 points that we know that Harry, before Harry caught the snitch. So 230. I would have been like, okay, you know what? Gryffindor scored 230 points. So I'm going to take 230 points from each of you. That's what I would have done, because they are acting like children and they just did a ridiculous like prank. It didn't even affect Harry at all. So like it didn't even have the effect they wanted. It was just terrible, really short-lived, and it just didn't even make sense. So, you know, good try, but it did absolutely nothing. So I just would have given more of a punishment. But that's just me. McGonagall, you know, she's known for being strict, but I don't think that she lives up to her reputation of being strict here in this moment, because only taking 50 points from each of them, that's only 200 points taken. I would have done 230 for each. Like, that would have given them, like, way into the negatives. But that's how mad I would have been, you know? Like, that's not okay. Or at least take 100 each. Like, I don't know. I'm just so annoyed that they did that. It was just so dumb. But, you know, that punishment is just a really great way to, or not like a great way, but Malfoy, Crabbe, and Goyle, and Marcus Flint getting detention and points taken on top of Gryffindor winning, like, that's a good day, right? Even though it was their stupid little prank, it's a good day for Gryffindor today, for sure. So, they're gonna all head over to the Gryffindor common room for a celebratory party. So, fun party in the Gryffindor common room. It lasts all day and all night. It starts, you know, the matches at what, like, 10 a.m., and it's done by probably like 11:30-ish or whatever. So right after the players, they all go shower and everything, and then they go back into common room, and it's just a huge party. Like, it literally lasts right after the match ends all the way into the nighttime. All of Gryffindor is just so excited that they're in the Quidditch finals, and, you know, it's the weekend. They're just all so happy and excited. Life is good right now, despite the danger of Sirius Black and everything else going on. They're all just so, so, so excited. They have so much house pride. And to Harry, it almost feels like they had already won the Quidditch World Cup just because of the celebration and the atmosphere in the Gryffindor common room. The twins, they disappear for a couple of hours during the party, and they come back with butterbeer and pumpkin fizz and all these Honeyduke sweets. And everyone's like kind of wondering, like, how did you do that? Like, how'd you get that? That's a Honeydukes. Like, everyone's very curious, but they're not asking too many questions because they're just glad they have all these fun sweets and treats now. And Angelina Johnson in particular, remember Angelina? She is one of the Gryffindor teammates, the teammates of Fred and George and Harry. She's one of the chasers on the team. And she asks George, like, where did you get this from? Like, how did you do that? And Fred says pretty much just to Harry. He just kind of like mutters to Harry, with a little help from Moony, Wormtail, Padfoot, and Prongs. So we already know that they are the writers. They call themselves the purveyors of the Marauder's Map. They're the ones who created it. And they're the ones, like, with their magic into that map that they created with all of the secret passages leading out of Hogwarts into Hogsmeade. You know, that's how Fred and George did it all these years. And remember, they gave it to Harry earlier in this book, a little Christmas present, holiday cheer, as they called it. So that's, you know, Fred, George, and Harry, and Ron and Hermione are the only ones that know that that's how they did it, by using one of the secret passageways. And that's only because, of course, Fred and George gave the map to Harry, and Harry told Ron and Hermione about it. Speaking of Hermione, she is the only one that isn't joining in with the festivities and all of the fun and celebration of having won the match. Harry sees her in the corner in the little armchair, and she's reading an enormous book, like, it's huge, and it's titled Home Life and Social Habits of British Muggles. So this book, of course, is for her Muggle Studies class. That's the class that Ron was like, why are you even taking that class, Hermione? You were raised by Muggles. Up until 2 years ago, you thought you were a Muggle. Like, you don't need to be taking this class. And she's like, yeah, but it'll be fascinating to know about their point of view and their perspective and how they think Muggle inventions and things work. And I do get her point of view, but I do know she's under a lot of stress with all of her classes. So, you know, Hermione just, she bit off more than she could chew, and it's been catching up to her. And I think having to read a book about how electricity works, like explaining what electricity is and all these other basic human Muggle things that Hermione already knows, I don't think it's the best use of her time. I mean, she does have time because she's a time turner, but still, it's just not the best use of it. And she could be studying for other stuff, because Hermione, without even studying for Muggle Studies class, like, I'm sure she could still pass tests and do well just because she was raised a Muggle. Like, I'm sure she knows enough. But this book, it was published by Little Red Books in 1987. So at this point in the series, the year is 1993 in the book. So this is a pretty, like, new, like, recent textbook. So, I mean, you know, it's not outdated, I don't think, unless there were some insane inventions and innovations in between 87 and 93. But either way, it's a recentish textbook, and it's by Wilhelm Wigworthy. And I couldn't find any information about him at all, because, you know, I like to do deep dives and discover more about kind of, like, characters mentioned a few times or once or anything. But this author was of this book, but I found absolutely no information about him apart from the fact that he wrote this book. So Harry goes up to her and he sees that she looks stressed, and he asks her, "Did you even come to the match?" And Hermione, like, not even looking up, says, "Of course I did, Harry. Like, why wouldn't I go to support you?" She's like, "Yep, of course I did. And I'm very glad we won. And I think you did really well in the match, but I really need to read this by Monday." And it's Saturday at this point. And Harry's telling her to just take a break and relax, like, have some food. And he's looking over at Ron and trying to tell if his expression looks like he's in a good enough mood to bury the hatchet and everything. And Hermione tells him, "Harry, I have a lot to do." She still has 422 pages to read, so she definitely does have a lot to do. And she's starting to sound a little bit hysterical. And she says, "Besides, he doesn't want me to join in." And she's, of course, referring to Ron. And that moment is the moment where Ron decides to say very loudly, if Scabbers hadn't just been eaten, he could have had some of those fudge flies. He used to really like them. And, you know, Ron is doing this. Of course, he's upset about Scabbers being eaten and everything. And he's kind of reminiscing and saying that Scabbers would have loved those fudge flies. But he is also saying these things because he knows that Hermione has, like, seemingly no remorse for what happened, for Crookshanks apparently eating Scabbers. So he's not just doing this to, like, think of Scabbers. He's also saying this to make Hermione feel bad. Ron is clearly doing that, and they all know it. And she hears him say that, of course, because he does it on purpose. And she just bursts into tears. And Harry, before he can even say or do anything, she just runs up the staircase. She has her book in her hand, her enormous book of all the pages she has to read in her hands, and she just runs up the staircase sobbing. And Harry kind of goes up to Ron and quietly asks him, "Can't you just give her a break?" And Ron just straight up says, "No. If she just acted like she was sorry," like, he starts to say, like, "if she had only acted like she was sorry, then maybe, like, I'd feel better about it. Like, I would know she feels bad about it, but she doesn't act that way. So Ron isn't going to act, like, forgiving to her either." So he's saying, "She'll never admit she's wrong, Hermione. She's still acting like Scabbers has gone on vacation or something." And she kind of is acting that way. Like, this is hard. This is why the beginning of the end of Ron and Hermione's friendship seems so extreme, because they're both too stubborn to Hermione, for sure. Like, I wouldn't say Ron is as stubborn when it comes to admitting he's wrong, but Hermione definitely is very stubborn. Ron's right. She will almost never admit that she's incorrect. And because of this, you know, the fact that it's over their pets, about Ron's rat Scabbers apparently being eaten and Hermione's cat Crookshanks apparently being the one to have eaten his rat, like, that is not something that Ron is just going to be okay with. And he shouldn't have to be. Like, of course, it's a cat and rat, you know, you think of biology and natural instincts and stuff. But also set aside the fact that Hermione really could have done more to be more careful with Crookshanks, not just letting him roam wherever he wants. You know, like, there was evidence to show that Crookshanks really wanted to eat or attack Scabbers. So Hermione really could have done more to protect Scabbers and, you know, helping Ron's feelings, but she really didn't. And yes, Ron is being Ron. He's talking loudly and being like, "Well, if Scabbers was still alive," like, all this stuff. And I totally get it. He's still grieving and everything. And Hermione does feel bad about it, but she still isn't apologizing. She still isn't saying anything. She's not trying to make amends in any way. And that's what's really upsetting Ron. Because Hermione, she's not admitting that she's wrong. And Ron, I'm saying wrong and Ron so many times in these sentences. But Hermione not admitting that she's incorrect is what's really, really getting to Ron. Like, if Hermione had only acted sorry or said sorry or, you know, tried to make it up to Ron, he would have felt a lot better about it and he would have believed it to just be like an accident and he would have been like, okay, these things happen. But because Hermione isn't apologizing or acting sorry and she's trying to act like it's like a natural thing for her cat to attack her best friend's pet, you know, that's what's really getting to Ron. And I have to say, I think I am on Ron's side with this. Like, Hermione, you could have been more sensitive. And, you know, just like Ron said a few chapters ago, like, don't mind Hermione. She doesn't care much about other people's pets because she wasn't sensitive to the fact that Lavender Brown's pet bunny had just died, or her pet rabbit or whatever. Hermione, again, in that instance with Lavender, she was using logic, you know, and she using logic instead of being sympathetic or even showing a little bit of sympathy. Like, Hermione did not do that at all. So, of course, Lavender and Ron and everything, they're going to be offended by it. Like, you're not even sorry. You're not offering any words of comfort or anything whatsoever, especially when it was your cat that did this or seemingly did this. Like, I 100% agree with Ron. Like, I would be very mad too if one of my best friends was acting this way, not saying sorry, not doing anything. Like, I get that. I understand that. And despite Ron's personality of being loud and being like, well, Scabbers was just eaten, so he can't enjoy these flies. Like, yeah, that's going to make Hermione feel bad, especially because they've already been having a rocky friendship for a while now, like for a couple months or weeks or whatever, because of the Firebolt and now Scabbers and everything. Like, Hermione feels like she just can't win with Harry and Ron, especially Ron right now. So she is very much just upset. That's why she goes in her room and she starts crying. But still, Ron, I get it. You're mad because your friend didn't offer any sort of sympathy or sensitivity or comfort or anything whatsoever. So Hermione, like, you're in the wrong here too. That's my opinion. So the night continues on, and finally at 1 a.m. McGonagall comes into the Gryffindor common room and tells them to go to bed. So they're all still kind of worked up and they're all excited and everything, but it is a school still and they need to just go to bed. When Ron and Harry go back up to the dormitory, they're still talking about the match. Like, they're all still very excited and everything. But eventually, they all fall asleep. And Harry has a strange dream. He dreams that he's walking through a forest. His Firebolt is there over his shoulder for some reason. You know, the Quidditch match and everything. He's just thinking about the Firebolt, even in his dreams. And he sees glimpses of something like a silvery, white, wispy looking thing throughout the trees and everything, and he hears hooves and he's wondering like what this is. He hears the hooves like moving faster and faster, gathering speed, and eventually, like, he hears the galloping. That's what he's hearing. And eventually he wakes up, you know, because Ron screams. But before I get into what Ron is screaming about, I'm going to explain what it is Harry saw in the dream. The silvery white wispy thing, that's the Patronus. And the galloping of the hooves, that's what the Patronus was, the stag. So remember, Lupin was explaining that a full corporeal Patronus will, you know, have like a body. It won't just be like white smoke looking things. It'll be like a wispy form of an actual Patronus. And that's different for every witch and wizard that can produce a Patronus. You don't get to really choose what your Patronus is. It just changes according to you, yourself or whatever. It's one of those things in Harry Potter where it's like, you might really know that you belong in Hufflepuff, but if you were at Hogwarts in real life right now and a sorting hat was put on your head and it puts you into Ravenclaw, you know, it's like that kind of thing. You don't really truly 100% know, even though you know in your heart and soul and mind or whatever, yes, but we don't have a real Hogwarts to actually go and see for real, you know? So same with the Mirror of Erised, like, do you really know your heart's deepest, truest desire? Like, if you're that honest with yourself, will you, like, if you look into that mirror, what you see will not surprise you, you know? But, like, will it? You know, that's the kind of thing. Same with Love Potion and Mortensia. Like, you don't truly, really know what it would smell like to you. It smells different to everybody. And the Patronus is another example of this. Wands are another example. But Patronus is an example because you can do the quiz on wizardingworld.com and, you know, get your Patronus. But that doesn't mean whatever you get is what your Patronus would be in real life if we were able to produce Patronus charms in real life. Unfortunately, we cannot. This universe is kind of boring. No magic or anything. But that's why we have Harry Potter, you know? We can live vicariously or whatever you want to do. So my point with this, Patronus is you don't get to choose what they are, what form of an animal they take. For instance, Lupin's Patronus is a wolf. If he could have it his way, his Patronus would not be a wolf. Now, Harry, that galloping that he hears, the hooves, that is his/his dad's Patronus. So he'll learn that his dad's Patronus was a stag, which is like a deer. That's also what his animagus form was. So remember how I told you guys about, like, so many times throughout this whole podcast, but especially for this book, explaining the marauders and the animagus forms that they have. So Lupin is not an animagus because he is a werewolf, but Peter Pettigrew, he is a rat. That's his animagus form. And remember, he's Scabbers, aka Scabbers. He's, you know, been in rat form for 13 years. But Sirius Black, that's how he escaped Azkaban. He turned into his animagus form, which is a dog. That's the dog that Harry keeps seeing everywhere. And Harry's dad, his animagus form was a stag. And that was his dad's Patronus as well. And Harry, his Patronus is also a stag. And he will discover that at the end of this book, towards the end of this book, when he produces his best Patronus charm yet and saves himself and Sirius. So that is what he's dreaming of. That wispy, silvery thing that's galloping through the forest. It is the Patronus form of Harry or his dad's Patronus. So back to Ron waking Harry up with his scream. It is so loud and intense, a scream that Harry feels like he's just been, like, hit in the face. Like, that was Ron's intense scream. And it's total darkness, and he's all disoriented and confused, and they have those four-poster beds, so they have curtains, like, around their bed. So Harry's fumbling to get out of his curtains, and because, you know, whenever something is wrong or intense in movies, you're always caught, like, I don't know, you always trip on something. The characters, they always trip on something, or something always gets in their way, or their shirt gets caught on the door walking by. You know what I mean? Like, it's always that kind of stuff, and this is exactly what this reminds me of. Harry's unable to get out of his four-poster bed, like, he's fumbling with the curtains and the darkness and everything. So that's what that reminds me of. And he wakes up the whole dormitory, like, Seamus, you can hear him saying, what's going on? And Dean lights his lamp and everything. And you see Ron sitting up in bed. His curtains around his four-poster bed are torn. They've been, like, ripped apart. It's, like, hanging down on one side. And the look on his face is absolutely just a look of just abject terror. He is absolutely terrified right now. And Ron tells them it was Black, Sirius Black, with a knife. And he's saying, here, just now, he slashed the curtains and woke me up. And Dean is like, well, Ron, are you sure you weren't just dreaming? And Ron's telling him, just look at the curtains around me that are just torn on one side. You know, I tell you, like, he was here. And they all scramble out of bed. Harry's the one that gets to the door first. And he just sprints down the staircases, and doors behind them, like, our opening, because that's how intense and loud, like, Ron's huge scream was. It was so loud and intense. That's how terrified he was. Like, it woke up, like, the whole Gryffindor Tower, pretty much. And people are coming out of bed, and they're, like, opening the doors, like, what's going on? Like, who shouted? And Harry, of course, was sprinting down because he thought Sirius Black might still be in the tower. So he runs down, and he sees the common room is lit with the fire. You know, it's starting to die down, though, because they went to bed a while ago. And it's deserted. It's empty. There's nobody there. And everyone's asking, like, not everybody, but the boys are still asking, are you sure you weren't just dreaming, Ron, and everything? You hear people saying, Professor McGonagall told us to go to bed. And then everybody kind of starts reappearing again. People are coming out of their rooms. And you hear Fred saying, excellent, are we carrying on? Like, he's thinking the party is gonna just start back up again. which is definitely not the case. And then you hear Percy, of course, giving orders, telling everybody to go back upstairs, go to bed. He's walking down the staircase. He's pinning his head boy badge to his pajamas as if he lets anybody forget that he's head boy. But he's doing that because that's what Percy does. He wants to remind everybody, of course. So he's telling them to all go back to bed, go upstairs and everything. And Ron tells him, Percy, like, seriously, it was Sirius Black in our dormitory with a knife. It woke me up. And everyone just goes still. They all stop talking because they heard Ron. And they're shocked. They're a little scared and everything. And Percy looks a little startled. And he's like, Ron, you just ate too much. You had too many sweets. Like, it was a nightmare. And Ron's like insisting, like, no, it was Sirius Black. And in that moment, Professor McGonagall walks in. And she slams the portrait behind her, and she is absolutely furious. She's saying, like, Gryffindor won the match. I'm very, very excited. Of course I'm excited, and we're all excited. But I told you guys to go to bed. And she's saying, Percy, I expected better of you because he's head boy. And Percy's like, no, Professor, like, I didn't authorize this. Certainly not me. But he's saying, like, Ron, he had a nightmare. And Ron starts shouting again. He's saying, no, it wasn't a nightmare, Professor. I woke up and Sirius Black was standing over me with a knife. And she just stares at him. And she tells him, Weasley, like, don't be ridiculous. How could he have gotten through the portrait hole? And Ron says, ask him if he saw him. And he's pointing to the portrait hole. And of course, that's Sir Cadogan. Remember, it's usually the fat lady, but she didn't let Sirius Black in on Halloween. So she's taking a sabbatical right now. Taking time to recuperate and rest and get over that traumatic experience. And Sir Cadogan is the only one brave enough, the only portrait brave enough who took the job. So he's the one that's been changing passwords a bunch and doing all this crazy stuff. But Ron tells McGonagall, ask him if he saw him. So McGonagall looks a little suspicious and she goes and she asks Sir Cadogan, did you just let a man enter Gryffindor Tower? And Sir Cadogan, very proud, says, certainly, good lady. And everyone is just absolutely just silent. They're just in stunned silence right now. Both McGonagall and all the Gryffindors, because they all heard Sir Cadogan say, oh yeah, I just let him in. And that confirms that Ron's nightmare wasn't actually a nightmare. So when McGonagall is able to, like, speak, she's over her shocked silence. She says, you did? But what about the passwords? And she says, or Sir Cadogan says, he had them all written down on a piece of paper. He had the whole week's passwords written down. And McGonagall, right away, she just steps back in through the portrait hole, closes the portrait, and her face is just, like, I don't know if they've ever seen her more furious. She is so angry and furious that she's, like, her voice is shaking. She is so, so, so livid right now. And she asks the common room, which person, like in her shaky, furious voice, which foolish person wrote down this week's passwords and left them lying around? And there was just complete silence. And then you just heard like a terrified squeal. And Neville, who's wearing his little fluffy slippers, who was shaking from head to toe, raised his hand slowly into the air. And I feel so bad for Neville right now. I mean, of course he should have been more careful, but it's not really for lack of trying. Sir Cadogan has been changing the passwords multiple times a week, and it's already hard for the Gryffindors who aren't forgetful to keep up with them. Neville, especially, it's hard for him to keep up. He has always been forgetful, even so forgetful to the point where his grandma, who was concerned that he would probably lose his signed permission slip for Hogsmeade, she mailed it to McGonagall herself because she felt that Neville would lose it. So Neville has a reputation for being forgetful and for losing things. And then you mix that, or you combine that with Sir Cadogan, who has a reputation for being like so erratic and changing passwords constantly. Like, Neville's gonna have some trouble. So this was his solution. Like, let me just write them all down on a piece of paper and that way I won't forget, and like I'll just read them off and one of them is bound to let me in. So he lost this because he had the tendency to lose things. Not a great quality, but that's Neville. That's what he does. And he lost that piece of paper, and Sirius Black saw it, picked it up, and read them off to Sir Cadogan, and Sir Cadogan was like, yep, those are the passwords, or that's the current password, and let him in. And Sirius Black went through the Gryffindor common room, and remember, this is, like, a little bit probably nostalgic, for sure, for Sirius Black. Like, he's been back in Hogwarts because he was in on Halloween and everything, but he got back in the castle, and this time, he was actually able to go through Gryffindor common room. So my headcanon is that, like, you know, on Halloween when the fat lady didn't let him in, he's a Gryffindor, so that's his old home in that Gryffindor tower. So he definitely asked her, like, she told him, like, he demanded to be let in and I didn't let him in, and then he slashed her portrait because he was so angry. But, like, in my head canon, I really wonder if he, like, was like, okay, what were some passwords when I was at school here? And he probably, like, tried to use some or anything. Or I wonder if he would have done that. But I think he knew with the fat lady, like, she was not letting him in. Anyways, with Sir Cadogan, he didn't have to think or guess up any passwords because they were all written down on the paper. But as he's walking through the common room and everything, like, imagine the nostalgia that he feels, like, this was when he was happiest, was when he was here with his friends at school, away from his crazy family. And being in that common room, you know, like, he didn't even have a chance to, like, take it all in. Maybe he did for a few minutes, probably not, because, you know, he's a wanted man and it's dangerous to be there. But he goes up the steps into the dormitory to find Scabbers, which is Peter Pettigrew, remember? That's why he escaped Azkaban, to go and kill him. So that's the dormitory that he used to be in with Harry's dad, James, with Lupin, and with Peter Pettigrew. So, you know, some nostalgia, but he can't really revel in it because he's there to do a mission. He's on a mission, you know, he wants to kill Scabbers, even though everybody thinks that he was there to kill Harry. So he goes into that dormitory and he finds Ron's bed, and he slashes it. That's why he has a knife, right? He's slashing away the curtains. And he had the knife, of course, too, to kill Scabbers. Like, it wasn't just for the curtains. Like, that's how he was going to kill Scabbers, aka Peter Pettigrew. He was going to stab him with the knife or behead him or whatever he was going to do to that rat to kill him. But remember, Scabbers wasn't there, and he faked his death, like, a few weeks ago, and that's why they all think that Hermione's cat Crookshanks ate Scabbers, because Scabbers, like, bit his arm or whatever on his little rat body and faked his death and put in the blood in his sheets and everything to make it look like he was eaten. So that, you know, he was pretty clever faking his death that way, but it was because he was so scared he no longer felt like he could just hide in the Gryffindor Tower forever, right? He had to go hide elsewhere where he was hoping he wouldn't be caught or anything, or found by Sirius or Crookshanks or anything, but especially not Sirius. So, of course, it's all misunderstanding. Like, everyone thinks that Sirius Black is this madman who escaped Azkaban to kill Harry, and who was a Death Eater back in the day, and who betrayed his friend Lily and James Potter to Voldemort. But remember, it was actually Peter Pettigrew that did, and Peter and Sirius are the only ones alive who know that. So that is why Peter went to go in hiding. And he's been hiding for 13 years at Scabbers. But, I mean, like, at Hogwarts here, that's why he's been so sick and looking so ill and frail and everything. And it's because he's stressed out, because he knows Sirius Black escaped Azkaban. He knows that Sirius Black is coming after him to kill him. So he's terrified. He's just awful. He's such a coward. So that is why Sirius Black was in the dormitory with a knife. It wasn't to kill Harry, but that's what they suspect. And now they're all going to be thinking, like, oh, he cut Ron's curtains thinking it might have been Harry, but he woke Ron up in that process and he screamed, so he had to flee. It would have been like that scream of Ron's would have woken everybody up, and he only just had enough time to run back out of the portrait hole. So that's like, you know, that's kind of what their thought process is. But the reality is, like, Ron's scream, like, it did wake everybody up, but it would have looked really bad for Sirius to just be in there in the dormitory, so he had to flee no matter what. But it wasn't because he was trying to kill Harry, it was because he was trying to kill Peter Pettigrew in Scabbers' body. So again, like a lot of explanation there and reiterating on things that I've talked about different times in the episodes for this book. But again, it's just so important. And I like to have like a good little recap of it to remind everybody and go over it all, because it's just this whole imagination of J.K. Rowling for this book is just insane. Like the backstory is crazy. So I just imagine for Sirius too, like what it would have been like, that nostalgia to be in there and to see Harry up close if he decided to not slash Harry's curtains. Maybe he pulled them back and wanted to just look at Harry, look at how much he looked like his dad, you know, when he was that age. So he might have not done that, but still, because remember Harry's curtains were, he was fumbling through them. So even if Sirius did move them to look at Harry, he, you know, closed them back or whatever. But just Sirius being in there, imagining how his life was when he lived in this dormitory compared to how it is now and how it has been for the last 13 years. And even a little bit more than that, like when he graduated Hogwarts, how dangerous it was being out in the world. Like it's just so crazy if you think about like what must be running through his mind when he's just in there in Gryffindor common room, in the dormitory, just everything. He is not there under, positive or favorable circumstances or anything like that at all. And it is better that Peter Pettigrew, like Scabbers, wasn't actually in there, because, like, imagine Scabbers was there in Ron's bed sleeping and Sirius slashed the curtains and Ron screams. So maybe maybe Sirius manages to grab Scabbers as Ron is screaming, or just before Ron screams, and kills him right away. Like, and there goes Ron's there goes Sirius's innocence. There's no way to vindicate him of this crime he never committed, because he just killed the person who did commit it and now can't confess to it. So there's a lot of flaws with like the laws and the criminal system in the Wizarding World, of course. And Sirius Black is one of the biggest examples of it, because they could have given him Veritaserum, like truth potion. There are ways to bypass it and everything, but it's unlikely that they could have found Sirius bypassing it. You know, brought him to the ministry and given him Veritaserum and had him explain everything, he would have been a free man. He would have never ever have gone to Azkaban. So there really are so many flaws in the Wizarding World system. And even right now, like the Dementors are supposed to be like the best guards, yet they don't know that Sirius was just a dog that just walked past them, you know? So there's definitely some flaws, and it's better for Sirius that Pettigrew was not here, because there would have been no innocence for him. And there still wasn't necessarily any. Sirius really wasn't cleared or declared innocent until after he died. So it really sucks in that regard. The last 15 years of his life, you know, he spent 13 of them in Azkaban. And then the next two he spent hiding out. At first, just like in the mountains and nature, around Hogwarts, around Hogsmeade, he is having to eat rats to survive at that point. Even though Dumbledore knows he's there, I'm surprised he didn't send him more food and stuff like that. That's for Goblet of Fire to talk about that. But basically, so those last 13 years of his life, he's in Azkaban, and then the next year he is in the cold forest, nature, whatever, around Hogwarts and Hogsmeade, you know, trying to survive. And then after that, he's back in his childhood home for about a year, a little bit less than a year. And then he gets killed. So, and then he's not declared innocent until after he dies. So it's just really, it's a lot and it's sad. And overall, though, like, it is better that despite Pettigrew not being there, like in his Scabbers form, it's probably better because they're able to go fix it later in this book and, you know, try to vindicate Sirius. It's a lot to get into that. I don't want to get too convoluted right now, because these next few chapters in the rest of the book. It's just so much explanation about all this stuff. But basically, like, this is just, it's just scary for him. It's scary for Ron. It's scary for Harry, for all of the Gryffindors who are terrified that Sirius Black was in there, yet they have no idea that he is completely innocent and he is not the man that the Wizarding World thinks he is. And so that's rough on Sirius, but either way, he is driven by revenge and hatred right now. So that's what's keeping him going. And also, like, if Dumbledore and McGonagall, and if they were already, like, not convinced that Sir Cadogan was a terrible choice for Portrait Hole, then this for sure is the event where they're like, okay, he let Sirius Black in just because he had the passwords on a piece of paper. Like, okay, no. We need to get somebody new, and they're going to bring the fat lady back. But still. And then poor Neville. Like, Neville is in so much trouble right now, and it is his fault because he lost the paper, but also, like, it's such a Neville thing to happen. Like, so I feel so bad for him. He's in so much trouble, and he's going to be so upset, and he's just not going to be in a good place for the next few weeks. So I feel bad for Neville. And that is where the chapter ends. This chapter was a little bit shorter, I guess, compared to the rest of the chapters, and a little less, I guess, like, explanation heavy, just because it's, you know, major stuff happens, but not like later on in this book or even some earlier chapters where there was a lot of explanation about backstories and everything. But either way, another fun chapter. And this book just, it just keeps getting better. Like, I have always loved Prisoner of Azkaban so much. It's always been one of my favorites, book and movie, for Harry Potter. And I just love it so much. And this, doing this podcast continues to revive that love I have for it. And I can't wait to continue with all of these episodes for Prisoner of Azkaban. So next week, I'm going to be discussing chapter 14, Snape's Grudge. So make sure you read that. And just want to remind everybody that you can email me at theheirsofslytherinpodcast@gmail.com. Twitter is at Slytherin Pod. Facebook page is Heirs of Slytherin Podcast. And this podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Breaker, Radio Public, Anchor, and Pocket Casts. And make sure you read chapter 14 of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, Snape's Grudge, for next week's episode. Thank you for listening to the Heirs of Slytherin, a Harry Potter podcast. I'm Micaela, your host.